Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. My name is Dave Kubikin.
And good morning. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
Hi, Jane Marie. Jane Marie and I are two of the attorneys here at the Herzog Law Firm, and some combination of us are here every weekend talking to you about things like estate planning and elder law, wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, special needs. When Dan's on, we're talking some real estate, but we could talk about that anytime you want. We have offices in Albany, Clifton Park, Saratoga Springs, and down in Kingston, and we can serve any of your family's needs in New York as well as Massachusetts at times. Jane Marie, you could be our first caller by calling 518-476-5900. And if you have some questions and you think they're not maybe appropriate for radio or a little too specific, you can always call our office and schedule a no-cost consultation at 518-465-7581. You know, I have to write down the number, Ben and Jane Marie, because every now and then I freeze and I forget. So every single time I'm on the radio, I have to write down our own phone number. Isn't that sad?
It's not really sad. It's just you want to make sure that you give out the right number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's sad that I have to write it down and I can't do it without, you know, looking at something that says the number.
That's okay.
I have to also. It's fine. Mm-hmm. But I'm older, so it's more expected of me.
So right before we started, we were talking about Christmas. I'm decorating the house with the help of my kids and my wife. I'm doing literally the heavy lifting, but it should be a lot of fun. When do you guys usually decorate?
I don't usually until after Thanksgiving, that weekend. Sorry, that's the...
Right, that's like the line a lot of people have, right? Thanksgiving?
That's right. I don't want to have it out too early, so right after Thanksgiving is okay.
Ben, how about you?
It's funny, we were talking about this on the air the other day. If a couple of days ago when it was 60 out, I would have put the lights up and had everything ready to go, but I wouldn't plug them in until after Thanksgiving. But because I've stood out there in 20 degree weather, freezing my fingers off and other parts of my body, like my toes and my head, trying to put the lights on everything, and it just gets so cold, you just can't even think. So nicer weather like that, 60 degrees, I'll put the lights out and then just wait until after Thanksgiving, then turn them on.
If you ever want to make some side money, Ben, you could sell tickets for people watching you in the cold, putting the lights together. Just saying.
Yep.
So, Jamer, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Because we buy a live Christmas tree, that you have to wait and buy Christmas. You know, the other decorations you can do ahead of time, but we have bought it too early, and then you get the needles starting to fall off. So you have to be really careful.
Right. So we're fake pre-lit Christmas tree family right now, and I'm not very happy about it. But it is what it sure is easy. You know, you take the tree, you take it apart, you throw it in a bag, and it's in the basement the rest of the year. Right. But there's I like the smell. I like the smell of a real tree.
It is something really nice. And the cats think it's a real, it is a real tree, so they are in the tree the whole time we have it in the house.
Well, you got to be careful with the cats because of National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. You could never be too careful with the lights and the cats.
It kind of is like that if you have cats in the tree.
That's funny. Jamer, when your kids were little, did you do the family Christmas card and everyone's wearing the same outfit kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah, we did many cards like that.
Well, because that's the secret reason. That's the secret reason I'm decorating everything today is because photos are tomorrow, so.
Oh, that's why you're doing it early?
Yeah.
You're very organized.
Even
those days? Done so early? Or not you, your wife is. So.
She is the organized one, not me. All right, do you miss those days when they were little?
Yes, of course, absolutely. Christmas was more fun then because you had lots of presents to open. And now we have a bunch of teenagers, so it's just opening gift cards. So it's all done very quickly.
Bunch of envelopes.
That's
funny.
Yeah, it's an envelope. Everyone goes back and then looks at their phone again. So.
Well, I'm like, you know, I have my car on permanent Christmas music. There's a station on XM or Sirius or whatever it is called Holly, and that's my speed. And then every now and then they play a song by Charles, I'm going to ruin his name, Giraldi. He's like the guy who did all the Peanuts piano and all that stuff for like for Snoopy. And he does Oh Christmas Tree, Oh Tannenbaum. And it, as far as I'm concerned, it's like the best, like a jazz Christmas song. I'm in, all in.
Yeah, that's actually Vince Giraldi. But yes.
Vince.
Yes. So just think, you were thinking of Charles Giralt, and you mixed him with Vince Giraldi and came up with Charles Giraldi.
From now on, I'm going to write down phone numbers and Vince Giraldi, so I can't screw up.
But that's why we have you, Ben.
Well, I would have to give up my Christmas card if that was the case, and I just let that go. I couldn't.
Well, Ben, what's your favorite Christmas song?
It is The Christmas Song by Nat King Cole. There is absolutely no doubt it's the best Christmas song ever.
Mm-hmm.
It's not up for debate.
Nope, not one shred of debate. I think everybody on the air knows that listens to us that is absolutely my favorite Christmas song. I could listen to it over and over and over. Even if they were interrogating me, I could listen to that song and not be tired of it ever. So.
Who'd they do that to? Noriega or someone? They blasted heavy metal music to get
yes.
stuff.
Yes, they did.
It wouldn't work for you.
Not for me. No, not with Nat King Cole. Not for sure.
I'd rather listen to heavy metal music, but that's just me.
Oh, Jay Marie. All right, enough of this.
Such a kid.
We were having a moment here, Jay Marie, and you ruined it.
Sorry. Maybe Metallica.
Enter Sandman.
Yes.
Well, if you'd like.
Christmas
I was going to say, Jay Marie, if people want to end this discussion entirely, they're more than welcome to call the station at 518-476-5900. I know, Jamie, it's been a super busy stretch here for us. It normally is as the holidays are approaching and the year end is approaching. There's tax things that people want to do. There's you know, it's getting colder. It tends, unfortunately, when the weather turns, there's more and more clients that have long-term care needs or they surface a little more. So it's getting quite busy. I know we did a week of webinars, and I actually wanted to ask you about the one you did on Monday, because that was a not the normal webinar. So do you mind talking to us about what you presented on Monday?
Sure. The Monday one, so we have a relationship with the Alzheimer's Association where we co-sponsor a seminar for their caregiver series, and it's legal and financial planning for Alzheimer's disease. And it's really just the same, you know, type of elder law planning, but really focused towards people with Alzheimer's and with cognitive issues and how you can plan ahead to help them. You know, what kind of legal documents do you need to have and what do you need to think about in terms of home care and how you can get that in place. So it's a really great one, and it's really a great service to anyone who's a caregiver and in a caregiver support group.
Well, that's just it, right? There's two sides to the coin when it comes to really any long-term care situation, but particularly, you know, something like dementia. It's like a slow burn because you might be lulled into the comfort of, well, you know, my husband is diagnosed with dementia and, you know, he's all right now. And, you know, every now and then he forgets things. And then, you know, a couple years later, it's, you know, well, we're not having him drive anymore or, you know, it's a little more involved. And then somehow, some way, Jamie, they, you know, people come into our office and say, you know, my dad's got dementia. Mm-hmm. Say for how long? And they say, oh, it's been 5 years. It's been 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like, whoa, I wish 4 years ago you started to have some conversations about 4 years later when it will become a very labor intensive and you know, sometimes scary reality that someone is quite demented at that point.
Mm-hmm. Right. Some people wait, like you said, and there isn't any reason to wait, you know, especially because you need to get legal documents signed. And if you don't get your power of attorney and your healthcare proxy signed while you have capacity, you may have missed the chance to have those papers signed, right? And then you may not be able to have anyone make those decisions for you without having to have a guardian appointed.
That's exactly right, Jamie. And you know, one of my notes here for something I wanted to absolutely talk about because of a client issue was those powers of attorney. And it's not just because there might be, like, dementia. It's because anything could happen. There's a client of ours down in Kingston. You know, wife is now in a hospital in Poughkeepsie, and mm-hmm. she doesn't have a power of attorney. Okay. Her husband is in Kingston. I met with him, and there's lots of things to do. Hopefully she's going to get better. She was in dire straits, like didn't think she was going to make it. She's recovering fantastically. Now we're talking about home and maybe home with oxygen, maybe not a lot of help at home. But I said to him, it may not go that way, right? She's still in the hospital. You know, the trajectory, the what everyone's hoping for is now not just like living through the week, but now it's getting home. But that can also flip, and it may be that she's never able to go home because of the needs that she's got. The problem is he can't do anything about it in terms of helping move money around, helping making sure that, you know, if worst came to worst and God forbid she did pass, make sure we avoided probate, which is another thing on the list to talk about today. So the power of attorney can allow husband to do all sorts of things in the moment, plan ahead of time. And, you know, I said, I'm more than happy to drive to Poughkeepsie, but I'd really like to not drive to Poughkeepsie, right? I'd like to not charge you because of the fact that I have to drive to Poughkeepsie to officiate a power of attorney signing. You got to, guys, everyone out there, you have to have a power of attorney. When you see clients who are 30-somethings with, you know, little children, you're not just doing a will for them, you're doing a power of attorney for them and a health care proxy and a living will, because those things are important for everybody, because, you know, you might survive the crash, but now we're not in good shape. But we need powers of attorney out there. It's just like a precautionary document.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you mentioned the 30-something couples, because I did have a couple yesterday who has a 2-year-old and another baby on the way, so that's great. And, you know, they're mainly focused on the will because they want to do guardianship, of course. And that's important, of course. You have to have a will to appoint guardians for your children. But then I do talk to them about power of attorney and a healthcare proxy. And that's not something young people think that they need, right? But yet, once you explain the importance of it to them, I really don't want to do a will for you unless you do a power of attorney and a healthcare proxy also. Like, you need to have all three of those done together.
Exactly. And you could always change them. You could always revoke them. You know, as your kid, as that 2-year-old and that yet to be born year old, you know, eventually become mid 20s and early 30s, and mom and dad are still around, right? Mom and dad are likely going to have those kids be backups on their powers of attorney. It's just like there's an evolution to these estate plans, and it could start super basic and, you know, translation super inexpensive. And then it gets pretty complicated. You know, on Wednesday, I presented one of the webinars, and the topic was elder law basics. And I was like, man, if there was ever an oxymoron out there, like jumbo shrimp, it's elder law basics. There's nothing, you know, basic about it. There's nothing, you know, we try to simplify it and get to certain themes so people understand. But it's such a complicated area that, you know, if you're young, you need a power of attorney because, you know, who knows what's going to happen. If you get older, right, I tell people, if you're over 50 and you come into our office and you don't want to do the power of attorney, or you do it and you don't want to allow your agent, you know, quote-unquote gifting privileges that help us maybe create trust in the future, I tell them, I'm going to have you sign something saying I explained it all to you and you still agreed not to do the gifting. That's how important the gifting is. Like, we got to cover our butts and make sure that everyone knows we told Dad, sign the gifting section of the power of attorney. Because, we could literally go a whole month of shows talking fact pattern after fact pattern how someone comes in with a power of attorney. It might have been done a year ago, and we need to redo it because there are certain privileges and powers that aren't initialed, which now handcuff us. And the killer is, a lot of times those people do the right thing. They go to an attorney, and that attorney says, yeah, I could do that power of attorney in the will. And even though Dad already has dementia, the power of attorney for Dad that he did a year ago doesn't have the gifting privileges. It's like, well, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know. Then it you kind of say, well, why did you do all that paperwork? And because now you may have to redo it. And now a year later, the dementia may have gotten worse where he may not be able to sign, right?
Yeah. And listen, even if he could sign, you just paid for a power train. Now you got to pay for another one. You know, that would just aggravate me. I'm aggravated right now talking about it.
I thought you were going to talk about, not just that they don't sign the gifting rider, but people have come in with powers of attorney that they printed themselves online or they got the old form that, right?
Are you trying to make me upset, Jay Marie? Are you trying to rile me up on a Saturday morning? I'm about to decorate when I go home, and now you're going to get me upset?
It's fun to get you riled.
but we weren't planning on doing it. Let's talk about these online forms for a moment. So they're not all bad. They can get things done. You know, if you are sitting there and you're looking at your legal Zoom power of attorney, it wasn't a bad idea to start planning. It's maybe how you exercise that intent. When you do an online document, many times, even though you click on a little thing that says you're in New York, the form they spit out is a generic form. And there's parts of the power of attorney that are generic. There are parts of the power of attorney with, if we did it, if another attorney did it, there's a good portion that might be the same. And then there is a little portion, a medium-sized portion, that is totally different and means everything. And I've had people come in with online powers of attorney where they say, yep, it allows gifting, but unfortunately it's based on, you know, $10,000 because it's an online will they did from 15 years ago, even though they just signed it now. You'll go online, you'll find some form. Oh, here's a form that's free. I don't even have to pay for it. Let me download this. I'll change the name. I'll wipe things out. There you go. Mm-hmm. Well, the law's changed. The law's changed twice since 15 years ago. So that power of attorney, you may think it works, and it's not going to work. You may think you're allowing gifting because you checked off something or you initialed something that says, you know, gifting up to $10,000, $11,000, $12,000, $13,000. That's not the cost of, that's not the value of your home. Like, we need to gift your home sometimes. And I think a lot of it, Jay Marie, comes down to the word gift, and people don't actually realize what gift means, because when you hear gift, you think gift. You think like Christmas gift or birthday gift. And that's not what gifting is, right?
No, right. That's something I always have to explain to clients. They're kind of always hesitant when they get to that point. They're either hesitant, like, I don't want my to make gifts to themselves, you know, or they're like,
you know, okay. Sorry, Jeremy, you know what I see a lot sometimes? You know, husband sneaking a peek at if wife is initialing and she's looking to see if he's initialing a section.
Yeah, right.
It cracks me up.
Right. So, you know, what you're talking about, though, gifting the house, I tell them that most of the time we're only doing the gifting rider to do long-term care planning, to save your house if you need to go in a nursing home. And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah, having to put your house in a trust, that's considered a gift. And it's not obvious, you know, but if you don't have that power, you cannot put that house in a trust. Our power of attorney even specifically said that your agent can make gifts. I mean, I'm sorry, create trusts and do long-term care planning. So it really gets to that point in the future where you have to protect your assets.
Right. And so whenever we talk about the word like irrevocable, our Medicaid trusts are quote-unquote irrevocable, and everyone tightens up and they say, oh, well, I don't like that. It's irrevocable. I heard bad things about what that word means. Legally, it means something different, and I'm not going to get into it now, but the word gift, like what gifts are legally, is where you receive back less than fair market value for whatever you're giving. That's what a gift is, okay? If you take your house, you and your husband, and you decide to create a revocable trust, and you want to put that house into the revocable trust, that revocable trust is under your tax ID number, okay? You are on both sides of the equation on that. If you have a house just in your name, and your wife's name is not on it, And at some point, because we want to just simply avoid probate, because when one spouse dies, we want it to, boom, immediately go to the other spouse. We may say, hey, let's sign a new deed to add spouse to the deed. Okay? These are like normal things, no long-term care planning involved, right? In those instances, the act of signing a new deed to put it into your revocable trust or to add someone to it or to do a life estate deed that sometimes we talk about, that is a gift of a property interest to someone else, even to your wife. It's a gift to your trust. It could be a gift to your children where you retain a life use. And the reason why it's a gift is because it wasn't a sale. It's because you didn't get any money back. You didn't get fair market value in return for what you just did. And as a result, it's a gift. So much of the gifting is just normal stuff. It's, for example, my client whose wife is in Poughkeepsie in a hospital. She's got some accounts in her own name. If he wants to just simply add his name to the account or verify there's a beneficiary on that account, and if not, add his name as a beneficiary, just so that if she passed, he doesn't have to go through probate. He doesn't have to do anything like that, right? It's just his money immediately. The act of him signing for her to change a beneficiary can be considered a gift. Him adding himself to her account, signing for her to add himself. She wants to do it. She's in Poughkeepsie. She says do it on the phone. She can't sign because she's down there. He can't do it without that gifting provision. And you know, I tell people all the time, I just wish New York State didn't use the word gift. You know, if instead of gift, they said, you know, can really save the day just in case something bad happens provision. everyone would initial it, but that's, they call it a gift. So, because it is a gift, technically. And I understand why people are hesitant about it, but it can really screw things up down the road because, you know, when someone comes in and they say, dad's in a nursing home or he's in rehab and we're not sure where he's going to go from now, he's got a whole bunch of money, don't know what to do with it, and they give me a power of attorney, Jamie, that feels, it just feels right. It feels like it's got 10 pages to it, right? I'm like, oh, good. This is the good one. I don't need to change it. And you turn the pages and you see, oh, my God, that section wasn't initialed.
And now we
have to rely on getting lucky and hoping, crossing our fingers, that dad or mom or wife is able to sign a new power of attorney.
Absolutely. That's most of the time when we make our trips outside the office. We've been to, I think, every nursing home in the area and every assisted living in the area, which we're happy to do. But we have to now go and see if you can sign a power of attorney, if you're still able to do that, so that these transfers can take place. And, you know, when you were talking about that, your client with the bank accounts, a lot of married couples have separate bank accounts, right? And you can't get into that other account even though you're married, right? You need to have a power of attorney that lets you do that. So married couples don't even really think of it. It's just like my account, your account, whatever. You could get into it if you need to, but you can't, right?
People think that they could sign for their spouse because they could both sign a check. And it's you can sign a check because you're both on the account. It's not because you could sign for your wife. It's because you're signing for yourself and you're on the account. And adding that name is a whole other thing. Let me ask you, when's the last time you were at a assisted living or nursing home for a signing, out of curiosity? I want to know, first of all, if I'm the one that gets stuck with them all the time, because I feel like I'm there. I'm at those places all the time.
I was at Avila within the past week.
Can I say something that's controversial, Jamie? The nursing homes are getting nicer. They're getting nicer.
Yeah. They are.
Pre-COVID, post-COVID, or during COVID, whatever we call this period right now, they're a lot better. They're a lot cleaner. Obviously, there's maybe other issues at play, and they're forced to be cleaner. But they're all, I'm changing my rankings, my internal rankings, Jamie. A lot of them that shall remain nameless, that I would have rather walked into the woods and never come back if I ever was in that situation. They're a lot better now. I mean, there's not a lot of beds out there, but I don't know if you've seen the same thing.
I have, and I'm thinking of one in particular, but we won't do names on the air. Yeah, some of them are nicer. Yeah.
There's one by an airport that is significantly nicer than it used to be.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. Yeah.
Night and day. And it really changes the flavor of things. Not that anyone is going to choose to be in a nursing home. That's not the point. But it sure is nice to know that, probably in the second half hour, Jamie, we'll talk about the home care situation going on these days. But it is comforting to know that if, heaven forbid, a loved one does need a nursing home, they are hopefully going to get a better kind of life there while they're there, because I think I could say confidently they're all getting better. I've heard less complaints.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's good. Other than the visitation, so that was just a COVID thing where you couldn't get in to see people, and hopefully that's not a problem. That they just recently changed that. I think it was this week that all nursing homes are open to all visitation all the time by relatives.
That's great. That is fantastic. I know we're coming up on the break at the half hour mark here, but I did want to talk about the webinars we have coming up and remind everyone that unless you want to hear Jay Marie and I keep talking, you're going to have to call us at 518-476-5900. We're taking off the next week because of Thanksgiving in terms of our webinars, and I think it's important for everyone who's going to go see mom and dad to understand that going to see mom and dad for the holidays, that's an opportunity for you to get some intel as to how they're doing. Checking out the fridge and so on. Is there spoiled food, expired stuff? Is there a lot of mail, a lot of unpaid bills? These are all signs where you may need to get a little involved, or maybe you'll suggest to them, hey, listen, Wednesday, December 1st at 10 a.m., we're going to, Herzog's going to have a webinar about elder law basics, which gets into this topic a little more in depth. At 2 p.m. on December 1st, that's again Wednesday, we'll be talking about what to do when a loved one dies, and we kind of use that as a vehicle for how to plan effectively. What are the things that can go wrong? In the second half hour, we're going to talk about Prince and what went wrong for him. What to do when a loved one dies gives us some lessons as to what to do down the road and how to plan for it. The following week on the 8th, also Wednesday, so December 8th at 10 a.m., we're going to be talking about the top 10 reasons to create an estate plan. And Jay Marie, I don't think you mind. Callers, if you want to call in or sign up, we will throw in an 11th reason to plan an estate.
That's right.
I'm such a nerd. At 2 p.m., we'll be talking about how not to pay for services. That's where our geriatric care manager, Kim Hance, shines and tells everyone about all the things they don't know about what may be available in their communities and counties that can help keep mom and dad at home. If you want a seat at one of those webinars, you can call us at 518-465-7581. But better yet, you can go to our website, herzoglaw.com, and click on the seminar page and click register. Or you can email us at info@herzoglaw.com.
Dave?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just remember, you're a nerd, but you're our nerd.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And we love you for it. It is 8:30. We're going to take our break right here. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And good morning, we're back. Good morning, I'm Dave Kapikian.
And I'm Jean Marie Schaefer.
And we've been talking this first half hour. Call us, Jane Marie. No one has called at all. We've been talking about all sorts of things from powers of attorney to the webinar schedule coming up. We started to talk about the holiday season and ways and things you should look out for when you're together with family. As I mentioned a couple times, you could be our first caller at 518-476-5900. Jane Marie, we got, I shared with you an article that I read that's very terrifying to me. First of all, because there's some good nuggets in it, but I feel like the article missed the boat completely as to the lessons to be learned from this celebrity's estate. You mind leading us through this?
Sure. So the celebrity is Prince, you know, and when he died, he wasn't married. He didn't have any children. He also did not have a will. So, you know, what does that do? So that leaves it open to the intestacy law, right? So the law that can inherit. But in his case, you know, it's not so straightforward as to who can inherit because all these people came forward and claimed to be relatives. People even claimed to be his children, and they had to do DNA tests. So it was kind of a nightmare, right, to kind of sort through and wait and find out who were the actual heirs who were supposed to inherit. And we don't even know if, you know, that's what he wanted, right? Did he want it to go to his siblings, or did he want it to go to maybe certain other individuals or certain charities? So there, he had no control over anything that happened to his estate after he was gone because he did not do a will. And it's kind of shocking that someone of his, you know, fame and with that much money never did a will, you know, or no one ever told him to do a will.
So that's what the article says, right? You know, I would say he was estate planless, not that he was necessarily just, you know, without a will, because, you know, New York has a similar statute to Minnesota. Prince lived in Minnesota. He died in Minnesota. He was a resident domicile there. So the laws of Minnesota covered his estate, and those laws are just like New York, and just as you said, say, all right, you don't have a spouse, you don't have kids, possibly, right? Because based on the paternity, yeah, possibly. Everything would go to your parents. If your parents predeceased you, everything goes to your siblings, and he had a number of whole, I think he had one whole and then a bunch of half-siblings. Okay.
Right.
So they all were treated as whole siblings for purposes of dividing stuff. And a lot of them, the article mentions, he wasn't in touch with. Chances are, if you cornered him and said, where would you like everything to go? And based on the way he lived his life and things that he contributed to, it probably wouldn't be these six people that get everything, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. He had, you know, apparently a vault full of unreleased recorded Prince songs that have still not seen the light of day because it's in litigation. There, by the way, there was a fight as to the value of his estate because of those things, because how do you possibly value all this intellectual property that consists of stuff he recorded? You know, you probably have box set upon box set of additional songs that can be released. So the process of a probate when you have a will, right, the proving of the will, or the process of administering your estate when there is no will, is they're like parallel, you know, it's like parallel, you know, lanes on the highway, where we need to tell people who might get things if there is no will that they might be entitled to something, as is the case here with Prince. And obviously when there is no will, we already know who it's going to be. It's this category of people. And in this case, would be siblings, half siblings, and if it turned out one of those kids was right, they would likely get everything. So, just put a pin in that. Now, the article says, "Well, look, he should have done a will. He's Prince. You got to do a will, Jamie. You have to do. Everyone has to do a will, right? That's the end of the discussion. If he had only done a will, we're good. There's nothing to talk about." And I looked up this guy that wrote the article. His name is Bob Carlson. He is a retirement expert. He's got a very nice-looking website. He's got a newsletter and whatever, a, you know, nationally known guy here. And he totally missed the boat, in my opinion. And a lot of people do. Because that same year that Prince died, David Bowie died. I remember. Remember, it was like the year where all of the best musicians are, you know, why is this happening, right? There are no articles like this about David Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
Google it and try to find an article about how David Bowie screwed up his estate plan. It doesn't exist. And it's not because David Bowie did a will. It's because David Bowie did trusts. David Bowie took the courts out of the equation. He said, I'm not going to just leave it to the people I want. I'm going to avoid probate. I am not going to let all these people who claim to be my siblings or are my siblings or claim to be my son or is my son, I don't want them to clog up the probate process because, yes, there a will would have provided clarity as to where money goes, but the litigations that existed in this estate, at least for the first several years of it, would have gone on no matter what because they would have said, Prince is a, you know, Prince overdosed. Prince, you know, was a drug addict. He was this, he was that. There's no way he knew what he was doing when he signed his will. We're going to fight to get that will knocked out of probate. And I'm shocked, this whole article, you know, probably a couple thousand words, not one mention of the word trust. And it goes to show you, you know, sometimes people who, you know, are retirement and estate planning experts, he's not an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
He missed the boat on it, Jamery. I'm sorry. If you want to avoid the mess, avoid probate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's your 30-something-year-old young couple, you know, growing their family, wills are great. We're planning on them not dying for a while, right? They have rules just in case something god-awful happens, but we're planning like nothing bad's going to happen for a while. And if it does, we're covered. 50s, 60s, definitely 60s and up. Obviously, depending on fact pattern, depending on assets, depending on your wishes, get it out of probate. Avoid that process entirely. Last week, Jamie, we were talking about one of our favorite clients in Kingston who I think intentionally is going through probate so we can keep talking about it on the radio so more people learn. He used to come to all our webinars, all our seminars, excuse me. And so to me, the boat is the avoid the litigation, avoid the trouble, because Prince was going to have trouble no matter what, whether he had a will or not. A will definitely would have been a good starting point, but for someone like Prince, how do you not have trusts?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
He should have had lunch with David Bowie. They could have talked about it, and he would have been convinced.
David, J. Marie, we do have a caller. We have Donna from Albany.
Hey, Donna.
Good morning.
Hello.
How are you?
Good morning. Good. How are you?
Good. What's up?
I have a question regarding planning, like in Medicare and gifting. You were just talking about gifting, but I was wondering, is there like a yearly amount you can give or anything that won't affect your Medicare planning?
So, and if you don't mind, just turn down your radio just a bit there, Donna.
Sure.
Okay. So, there, just want to clarify, so you, I think you mean Medicaid instead of Medicare, but same difference, we know what you mean.
Right.
There are gifting allowances that mean that there are no tax ramifications to giving money. And typically, you know, now it's $15,000. You can give everyone in the world each $15,000, paging Jeff Bezos, and there are no taxes involved. There's no reporting involved on it. And a lot of times people confuse that with what are you allowed to give for purposes of Medicaid planning. And the answer for Medicaid planning is actually technically zero. You shouldn't be doing any giving. However, I think what you're asking is what could we get away with? And if we're filing a Medicaid application for someone, typically the counties are not looking at transfers that took place in those last 5 years. That's what they care about. They're not looking at transfers less than a certain amount. That amount ranges county to county. Typically, it's $1,500, $2,000, something like that. Although they can flag anything they want. They can flag transfers and gifts that are less than those amounts. There's one big exception, or two big exceptions, maybe even three. One of them is if you have always made these gifts. Christmas time has come. Every Christmas, I give each of my kids X thousands of dollars. Great. If you're doing that prior to the 5 years, we can establish a pattern of gifting and make the gifts, even if it was the year before a nursing home, make those gifts exempt. Times you're giving not knowing you might need a nursing home, and then there's a catastrophic event, a stroke or something, those transfers may be exempt. I've read cases before where a gentleman paid for his daughter's wedding, right? It was a gift for his daughter. And because it happened in the last 5 years, because, you know, within 5 years of that moment, he needed a nursing home, unfortunately, Medicaid flagged it. And his family was able to win in that because he had, his health was otherwise good. He had this catastrophic event. All of a sudden, he needs a nursing home. There's no way he knew. He wasn't planning and deceiving Medicaid and giving for his daughter. So there are exceptions like that. Okay. There's no dollar amount, though. I could say, you're probably good under $2,000. And I probably have more advice to give you, but off air, if you know what I'm saying.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Jamie, did I miss anything on that? I think disabled child exemptions and obviously transfers to a spouse.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's true. It's you have to really keep your gifts under $2,000 unless, you can go and try and prove that they were not for a Medicaid purpose, but that is usually involving a fair hearing. And you may win at the fair hearing, but you have to realize that's a lot of time.
A lot of work. Yeah. I mean, you might be right, but if you need to prove that you're right, it kind of defeats the purpose because there's during that time, Medicaid's not approved. Nursing homes expect to get paid, and it might become a dicey situation. I'm a fan of, odd numbers. I don't mean literally odd numbers. I mean figuratively, I guess, odd numbers as transfers. So if you're going to move, a couple thousand bucks, don't make it a round number. Make it a different number, $1,742.68. I don't think Medicaid's flagging that. You know what I mean?
Right. That's true.
Although they can, and they have the right to, and they could ask for a copy of the check and so on. So, there's a world of what actually may happen or what do the statutes provide, and there's a world of what do they normally do. I mean, I know I was always kind of brought up thinking that under $1,000 you're okay, and then it quickly became about $1,500, and somewhere along the line, maybe because the counties are busier, I think it passed $2,000 per month, and it kind of wouldn't look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's honestly just based on the amount of time they have, because they have a lot of applications, a lot of financial records to look through. So they're kind of, they have to set a limit for themselves that they're not going to bother with.
When we have a client that's a Medicaid client, so family comes in and we're trying to get them qualified for Medicaid, Mike or Jessica, they'll look at 5 years worth of records. There are absolutely amazing paralegals, Mike and Jess, and they'll look at the last 5 years and kind of flag internally, these are the things that Medicaid may flag. And then we kind of get together and say, all right, let's present this to Medicaid this way. Maybe we get in front of it. We say, oh, here are all the gifts that took place. And we kind of bite the bullet just to kind of control the narrative. Or sometimes we say, look, there's actually a pattern of gifting here. So we know they're going to flag X, Y, and Z gifts, but we're going to show these other transfers that took place and maybe even smaller transfers under those limits that took place in other years to show this pattern, right? As an example, right. Jamie, if last year Dad gave you $5,000 in a check on a certain date, and the years before that it was $2,000, around Christmas time. Well, Medicaid could say, wait a minute, he's increasing it, we're going to penalize you. But you may say, well, wait a minute, he gave me $2,000 the year before, but he also did this for me, or he paid this for me, so it all added up to $5,000, right? And we're doing it to build this pattern, because we're assuming the pattern is going to work. And I've had one time where the pattern didn't work. We didn't win that argument. And all of a sudden, we got bummed for $50 gifts and $150 gifts because we presented to Medicaid those transfers and said, look, this is the pattern. Mm-hmm. And we lost on it. Now all these other smaller gifts came in. So it's, you got to be careful. It's a thoughtful process because it's not just, so this is the number and that's it. Everything mm-hmm. matters. All the facts matter.
Right, that's right. And sometimes when we meet with someone, we don't really know. Maybe they don't know what their parents, did with the money. There may be, because they weren't actively involved or they weren't handling their parents' finances. And we think that they may be eligible for Medicaid, and then we go through the 5 years, and then we find all these unexplained transfers. So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of investigation to go through the financial records for Medicaid. Maybe mom and dad just bought something, but you can't tell right from the bank, and you have to look for receipts, right? So it can be a pretty complicated process.
For sure.
Which is why I can do.
Right before Donna called, we were kind of finishing up this whole Prince discussion. I just wanted to get back to it for a second. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of clients, Jamie, or potential clients, who they don't think they have enough money for a trust because I don't think they realize what the trust is. I think they think trust fund. Like, mm-hmm. this person has a trust fund. There's probably not a small amount of money, in a trust fund, right? If I said a trust fund to you. Having a trust has nothing to do with that. It might just be your house trust. It just might be one, $250,000 house. I think that's a lot of money, by the way. But we put that house into a trust, and that trust can avoid probate. That trust can make sure that, no, we're not going to have a Prince-style litigation. That's not what we're trying to avoid with having, avoiding probate. But we're avoiding the court fees, the filing mm-hmm. fees. We're avoiding calling Jane Marie and having her be retained to administer your estate, right? Mm-hmm. So there's we're saving a couple thousand bucks there. And mm-hmm. so we'll do a trust and we'll spend a couple thousand bucks. So it's kind of even. But what you're also doing is you're saying, look, if mom and dad can't live in that house forever, if it turns out one day that one of them passes and the other one needs at some point some skilled nursing, if at that point you sold the house and it wasn't in a trust, that house is cash. It's money that Medicaid's going to want. If, by the way, if it's still just a house, if, grandpa lives alone, he needs a nursing home now, he never did planning, best case, Medicaid's going to put a lien on that house mm-hmm. while he's in a nursing home. So the what you do with creating a trust is it's not that you're saying I have a lot of money. You're saying I want to make sure I avoid probate. I want to kind of break even there. And then everything else is kind of gravy. I want to protect things. And this is like the other, this little scribble down note that I know we have like 10 minutes left. I want to make sure we get it out. Doing a Medicaid trust does not mean you're agreeing to go on Medicaid one day. It means that you're going to give yourself the option of doing that, as well as the option to remove money from your trust whenever you feel like it, and private paying for your care. You're not saying, I'm not going to go to, a wonderful assisted living facility and spend all my money there because I did a Medicaid trust. You're saying, I have the option, my family has the option of saving all the money, as well as the option to spend all the money.
Haven't you had clients say to you, I'm not going to a nursing home, so I don't need to worry about a Medicaid trust?
Yeah. Listen, one of these days, I don't know when it'll happen, one of these days, someone will actually voluntarily decide to go into a nursing home. I'm yet to ever see it happen.
No, that's true. Right. But some people are so dead against it, they think they don't need to plan at all. Right? So.
Yeah. Cool. Well, then just avoid probate. All good. Mm-hmm. Just avoid probate then, because maybe you're wrong. Maybe it doesn't work out that way. Or maybe mm-hmm. you're never going to go into a nursing home, but you want care at home. And right now there's no look back period, but there will be. I mean, it's on mm-hmm. the books. We've spent a year and a half talking about it. Jeez. Mm-hmm. But it might be April 1st now. It might be July 1st. But eventually there'll be a look back period for home care. Or you own more than a house, and there's some money to protect, or you want rules on who gets your money. And, I'm pro-will because it's a form of planning, and I just want people to have a plan and get educated on it. But, it's articles like that Prince article that I think sometimes are counterproductive because it puts the focus on a document that still has its issues, right, going through probate. It's still at times a problematic. I mean, how many estates do you think we have at a time, Jamie? I mean, I think, what, 200 estates?
200. Yeah. Even for clients that we trust for, so many times there's assets that don't have a beneficiary on it or that they did not put in the trust, and we still end up doing probate.
And it's not a trick, guy. We're plenty busy. We don't want to do that work. We just want you to fund your trust, particularly if you did. Or put beneficiaries on assets if that's appropriate, or do a life estate deed with your house if that's appropriate. Obviously, the devil's in the details, and it's always a good idea to talk to one of us, Harry, Debbie, Jay Marie, myself, about these kinds of things. And if there's a long-term care issue, whether it's Medicaid or not, you know, Kim is a wonderful resource as well for people.
That's right. Something else, I think we have a little time to bring that up. I didn't think you were going to mention David Bowie, but it's just strange because there was an article in the Times that I read this week about his wife, Iman, and how, I didn't know this, but did you know that I had a house up in the Catskills?
You know, I did know this because there's a number of celebrities actually that have houses in Dutchess County or Ulster County. Mm-hmm. And one of my clients was mentioning it. Bo, do you know whereabouts?
Well, no, so that's why I'm bringing this up. So they were always very private and never, you know, wanted to reveal where anything was. Of course, they didn't want people at their house. So when you have a trust, you know, their house, that's, you know, no one's going to find out where your house is, right? If you have a will, when you file a will, all your assets are, you know, everything that goes under that will, that's public information. And anyone could find that out. Now, maybe that's only important to celebrities, right? Not to, you know, the rest of us. But it is another factor that you keep things private by doing them in a trust.
Jamie, did you worked in the city, right?
Yeah, I did.
So have you ever, do you know what ACRIS is?
Yeah. That's where you look up, real New York City. Yeah.
Right. So if you're in the five boroughs, there's this. Website and then like a little application, I guess you can call it, called ACRIS, which is an acronym for something I have no idea. But you can look up by party name or by parcel and figure out everything. There's copies of deeds. There's all sorts of things. And one of my parents' close friends from downstate has asked us to do some estate planning. And he's kind of dragging his feet a little bit on stuff. And this morning I was in the office. You know what? I'm just going to go on ACRIS and look him up. Mm-hmm. And I was able to find all his parcels. I was able to find an LLC he formed and what parcels those own. I have a whole packet for him. I'm about to see him tomorrow. And I'm going to hand him this thing and say, here's all the stuff I found out about you online. And it's crazy how much you could find out. Like, literally, if you searched the last name Bowie, you might find this parcel if it was in New York City. Now, chances are they formed an LLC or something, and it would be a little harder, but... I mean, you're taken. It's all public. And, you know, sometimes you don't want your neighbors in your business, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's a good point. So you can either do a trust or you could do an LLC. Lots of people have real estate in trusts. They call them nominee trusts. So you don't really know who the owner is, right? It's just a trust holding it for someone else. So there's lots of things you can do that way so that your stuff isn't public information.
We got a couple of minutes left here. Ben, I don't know if you're around. I'd like to know what you guys are doing for Thanksgiving.
We're still trying to unpack boxes and move stuff around. So I believe that if everything works out all right, it'll be my wife and I and my daughter and son-in-law. They'll come over because it's their Thanksgiving. And we'll celebrate quietly there. So
with a little neck and cole.
I could do an acting call. Absolutely, I could. We'll definitely probably have some Christmas music on in the background. So
that's fantastic. Chamber, how about you?
We are cooking this year, just having a few people over, not too many. You know, my least favorite part of Thanksgiving dinner is the turkey. I really like all the sides better. So that's what I'm looking for.
Nice Metallica playing in the background. It'll be nice. It'll be very romantic.
We have a wide variety of music, so we probably will be playing something like jazz in the background. That's kind of mellow, right?
I'm with you on the sides, though.
To heavy metal, to, you know, rock, to whatever. So you never know what you're going to get when I'm playing music.
Well, I know what I'm not going to get. Apparently, I'm not going to get Nat King Cole. I'm with you on the sides, though. I think a well-done, crusty stuffing is as good as it gets, in my opinion, my humble opinion.
Well, that sounds good.
Mm. Yeah, I'm getting hungry. Right. I can't wait for Thanksgiving, man. And all the football, we're here, finally.
I just think it's almost like Christmas. It's such a letdown when you get to the end of dinner. It's like, we did all this stuff, and it was like 20 minutes long, and now it's over. Now you got to clean it up. So it's like,
And it's, and in our house, Ben, it's like 3:30 at that point. It's like, what am I going to do the rest of the day?
Yeah. Go for a walk, I guess, if the weather's nice.
Well, right. How's the weather going to be? Do we know yet?
Yeah, it's not supposed to be rainy and mid-40s, so not too bad.
It is absolutely gorgeous outside today, by the way, guys. I'm staring out the window, and I swear to God, I saw a bald eagle fly by the office, Jamboree. And I think he was making fun of me because I'm bald, so, you know.
I think you brought that up yourself. That's great.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Was Eagle's head shiny like yours?
Ooh, wow. The gauntlet has been thrown.
The good news is next time I'm on the radio, I'm with Jay Murray again, so that'll be nice.
Well, you'll have plenty of time to think of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they'll be all the post-Thanksgiving stuff. The post-Thanksgiving consultations are always something because everyone goes home and they see mom and dad, or they see their siblings and they remember all the things they like about them or don't like about them, and they want to change their documents.
That's right.
Sometimes. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.